You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Talking to Death is released weekly, every Wednesday, and brought to you absolutely free. But if you want ad-free listening and exclusive bonuses, subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus at tenderfootplus.com or on Apple Podcasts.
Talking to Death is a production of Tenderfoot TV and iHeart Podcasts. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Talking to Death. It's Mike here. Where's Payne, right? Well, right now he's super busy with the new season of Up and Vanish, and I'm working from home today, getting over this cold, so I might sound a little off. But either way, we have a very exciting interview today. Our guest is a former music executive turned podcaster. He was CEO of Atlantic, Virgin Records, Capitol Music Group, and even had his own label. He signed some huge artists like Skid Row, Katy Perry, Lorde, and Matchbox 20, just to name a few. Now he has a whole network of shows and hosts an incredible Webby Award-winning podcast called Wrongful Conviction. His name is Jason Flom, and it was an absolute blast meeting him in New York City. His whole story about how he got into justice reform is actually just fascinating. I really don't have anything else to say, so let's go ahead and play the theme song.
Now that I know that you're an ex-music mogul, which I did not know, it's kind of badass, let's be real. What time period did you work in the music industry?
It's kind of an amazing journey that I had. I often say my story is really the story of my life is my journey from being wannabe Jimi Hendrix to chairman and CEO of three of the biggest record companies in the world, but more importantly, from being a drug addicted college dropout to a pioneer in criminal justice reform. And I do a lot of public speaking, and that's how I almost always start my speech with that, because it's kind of like, huh?
Wait, that was a big thing.
Yeah, but my music business journey started when I was 18 years old. I failed at being a rock star, and then decided through lucky break and serendipity and a lot of other things, I found out that I might be able to have an opportunity to create, help other people become rock stars.
I failed too.
And so many of us did.
But here we are.
And then live vicariously through them. So that was my plan from the time I started at Atlantic Records as an 18-year-old kid. And they gave me a staple gun and some double-sided tape and a bunch of Led Zeppelin posters and, sent me out at the record stores to go put these posters up. And I was like, this is the greatest job ever.
I feel like this was in the day where there was big money in that space, where those crazy record deals, because there were bands and artists doing millions of CD sales, right? I mean, casually.
Dude, it was, yeah. I mean, if you could fart and tune back then, you could more or less, have a, we didn't know how good we had it.
Right.
But it was an awesome time. There was, it was also a time when, the level of creativity, especially in rock and roll, was so extraordinary. And I grew up on rock and roll. So, I mean, I loved, the iconic rock bands of the 70s was what I grew up on. And so.
Top three, who are they?
Top three for me growing up. Wow, if I only had to pick three, it would be Zeppelin, Aerosmith, and I'm talking about early Aerosmith. So people are looking, they're going, wait, aren't they like, no. I'm talking about Get Your Wings, Toys in the Attic, Rocks, the first album. That was the serious, serious stuff. That's what's inspired, Guns N' Roses to start their band. Slash talks about that. in the book. But and if I had to pick a third, I mean, the first one that comes to mind is Bob Dylan, you know. I mean, different, but yeah, he, you know, I used to sit in school bored and transcribe his lyrics and just sit there in awe of, like, what the fuck?
Transcribe them, just but then, hearing it and writing it down? Just to experience it.
Just like
further?
Write out, like, poetry. Like, they're, you know, it's poetry. His lyrics are poetry. But then, you know, I mean,
is this before liner notes or what?
Yeah. I mean, well, that was before liner notes.
Is that how you used to listen to music back then?
Liner notes weren't really a thing back then. And there was no, like, okay. You know, now you can look up anything on Rap Genius, right?
Right. Whatever, it's like, right? So accessible. It doesn't really make sense. But
no,
yeah.
I would just memorize them and write them out. But then, of course, there was Queen, you know, and that was also one of my North Stars. So, I mean, I gave you four instead of three.
Okay. I mean, I'm glad you threw Queen in there, though. That's three is impossible, I feel like.
Dude, my dog's name is Freddie Mercury. Like, let's get serious.
That's your actual dog's name.
Yeah.
That's like my dog. Freddie Mercury, like both names.
His name is Freddie Mercury, yeah.
Okay.
Because he's a rock star and he's always looking for somebody to love. You know what I mean? So it's like, it makes kind of perfect sense.
Yeah, I'm a dog lover, an animal lover. And, you know, other than working on justice stuff, you know, animal stuff is my other sort of philanthropic, lean, whatever you want to call it, or cause. My, you know, there's others, but those
Your
are my
purpose?
Two main, yeah. And so saving the rhinos in particular, but dogs are just everything to me. And I can say that I love every dog I've ever had, but I've never had a connection with an animal like the one I have with Freddie.
Yeah.
And by the way, and this is, you know, this is a true story. It's going to sound too good to be true, but, and you may have even seen this because it went viral, but Freddie was on the beach about 3 months ago with my girlfriend. And I was actually, it's going to sound bougie, but I was on the golf course. And she texts me and she says, there's only one other person on the beach with us today. And it's one of our, a guy who lives in our neighborhood, who we know, with his dog. And he was stumbling around like he was disoriented. And then he collapsed and he's out cold. And she goes, I called, the ambulance. We're waiting for him now. And I was like, oh my God, please keep me posted. Like, what can I say? I'm not there. You know what I mean? Now, right. I'm not a doctor anyway. I don't know what to do.
Right.
Freddie goes and sticks himself under this guy's legs. His name's David. Sticks him under David's legs. Sticks himself on, positions himself there, holding his legs in the air. And just sits there like a sphinx with his little tennis ball in front of him that he was playing with before this happened. And waits for the ambulance. The ambulance drives onto the beach. EMS guys get out and they said to her, is he friendly? And she's like, yeah. And they go, good, because he's doing exactly what we need him to be doing, which is holding this guy's legs in the air because he's in diabetic shock. And you have to keep, I didn't know this, and she didn't even know this, and she's got training as a nurse, but you have to keep somebody's legs elevated, apparently, or a body part, to keep the blood flow going when they go into this diabetic shock. So
how'd your dog know that?
We don't know.
Just but an he sat there. Thing.
He sat there stone still the entire time as they were, you know, resuscitating him. And, you know, I found out later that he was not, you know, he was not far away from going into a coma. So
your dog saved this guy's life, potentially.
Well, with help, obviously, but we know that dogs can be trained to detect COVID, to detect cancers, to detect all those. We know that dogs have incredible abilities to help, but usually they have to be trained to do so. In this case, he just instinctually knew exactly what to do, and he just went and did it without anybody asking. He was off leash, by the way.
What do you make of that, then?
You know,
It makes you think.
We don't deserve dogs. That's all I can tell you that.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, what can you say? I mean, it was incredible. And I put it on my Instagram. My Instagram, by the way, is It's Jason Flom. If you want to follow me, is ITS Jason Flom. There was another Jason Flom who got there before me. He's a school teacher in Tallahassee. You can follow him too if you want. But yeah,
I'll follow him instead.
So yeah, no, dogs are... you know, what was it? The founder of Kinko's. I've heard a quote attributed to him where he said, my dog could do my job because he has the only two qualities that matter. He's enthusiastic and loyal. And I've always stuck with him.
Hey,
such a good
that's
quote.
A true thing. Right? That's a true statement.
But it's so much more than that. I mean, they're just, you know, and he's super friendly, you know, and, you know, it's like I'm an underdog person in sports. I always root for the underdog. Mm-hmm. Everything. I root for the underdog in life, right? That informs my work in justice.
Why is that?
I don't know.
I mean, I just grew up that way. And
like as a kid, you thought that too?
Yeah, I hate bullying. You know, I hate fucking bullying and I hate injustice.
Were you ever bullied?
I was probably bullied, you know, less than a lot of other kids. My brother was bullied very badly.
Okay.
That definitely left a really, it was a really tough thing from my childhood, just remembering that and being powerless to do anything about it.
Is he an older brother or?
Okay. Yeah, I was a year and a half older, but he's...
So you're the younger brother who... Yeah.
I was a younger brother who went to different schools, and even in camp, you know, like, it was just... It was bad. I mean, he looks very different. He's, you know, he had all sorts of problems. He's related to you know, I think he was born very prematurely, and so he had very poor coordination, physical issues, and of course, kids, you know, they pick on kids
people,
like that.
Yeah.
And so, and I really wasn't... I didn't know where it was coming from or who was doing it. I knew I didn't know what to do about it. But I hated it. And I hate it whenever I see it in any anywhere, whether it's animals, people, the justice system, you know. It's just and if I'm in a position, I think for all of us, if we're in a position to do something about it, you should do something about it. So I found, you know, for me, I found a way to make an impact, and it's been, you know, it's been my life's work for the last like 30 years.
So you wanted to be a rock star, and then you said that you became a college dropout, a drug addicted college dropout. Okay, what happened?
You said it like I aspired to it.
Well, yeah, I wanted to be a drug addict, college dropout. I mean, rock star, right?
Yeah, no, that wasn't...
The rock star life just gets you too soon, or what happened?
Yeah, I was a rebellious kid. I had nothing really to rebel against. I came from, you know, wonderful parents, and, you know, but I was...
Maybe rebelling against that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, we're all, when we're kids, I mean, look, I think I smoked... You know, I smoked as much weed. I was like a Jewish Rastafarian. Like, it was ridiculous. You know what I mean? And not in a religious
way,
but just
probably, right?
I just smoked all fucking
Did all your
day.
Friends know that you had the weed?
Yeah, it's because I was selling.
You look like weed guy.
Yeah. And I mean, I had hair.
Like Jason's got the weed.
I had so much hair that you couldn't see my face. It covered my entire head. Yeah. I don't know how I smoked through it, but I did. And the fact is, in the summer, it got really frizzy. So the fact is, I never really ran out of weed because, you know, I mean, I was selling it. So, which was really dumb, but, you know, I recognize that if not for the color of my skin and the zip code I grew up in, I absolutely would have gone to jail.
When did you first realize that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it really hit me when I had my moment, right? For many people who are listening, they've had a moment, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've had your moments that informed, you know, just sort of turn your life on a dime, it feels like, right? And for me, that moment came in 1993, so 30 years ago as we're sitting here. It was the most random thing. I happened to pick up the New York Post, which I never read. No one should read it. I still don't read it.
You're still an avid reader?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's poison. But
yeah.
But I picked up the New York Post this particular day because I guess I was meant to. The Times was sold out. I was getting in a taxi. You know, we didn't have phones to mess around with back then. So I happened to see a story that I was obviously meant to see, which was a story about a kid named Stephen Lennon. He had been sentenced to 15 years to life for a nonviolent first offense cocaine possession charge in New York State. And for those of you who think maybe I just misspoke, which would be a logical thing to assume because it sounds so crazy, I was actually telling this story to a guy I know yesterday who was a cop back then. He's like, no, that can't be. I was like, oh, yeah, that could be. So it was a nonviolent first offense cocaine possession charge in a maximum security prison in New York State. And he's serving 15 years to life. Now, it wasn't a small amount of coke, but they didn't catch him selling it. They happened to find it under the seat of his car, and he and his friend, who was a passenger in the car, both got arrested and charged with the full amount of the drugs. Yeah. And so in those days, fortunately, one of the organizations I work with has helped to lead the charge to reform these laws. But in those days, under the Rockefeller drug laws, any possession over 4 ounces of coke was treated as an A1 felony, the same as murder. So, and in fact, in some ways you'd be better off with murder because you can plead down to manslaughter and you can get, you know, you can usually get a plea on a drug charge too if you plead guilty. But if you go to trial, you get whacked. So these kids got 15 years to life. And the reason I think that it hit me so hard was because I had had my own substance abuse issues. Mm-hmm. At this point, this kid's name was Stephen Lennon. He had been in for a little over 8 years at this time. I'd been sober for almost 8 years because I'd gone to rehab instead of jail because, you know. But I had had issues with cocaine. And he was 32 years old. I was 32 years old. So I was like, damn, but wow. I mean, I'm not religious at all, but there but for the grace of something goes I, right? Some higher power. So I was like, fuck, I got to try to do something about this.
You know?
Like, because this is horrible. Like, this is unreal.
Yeah.
It's unreal.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
That probably felt very unfair, right? Just like, why am I so lucky, right? I mean, and you probably thought about why that is. And
of course.
Is it just because you're white?
Unfair on every level,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, how could this be?
Mm-hmm.
Nonviolent first offense.
Yeah, you picture possession. Yourself in there and you go, holy shit.
On many occasions, I had gotten into a car with someone to buy it,
mm-hmm.
who had lots of it in the car because they were driving around selling it to different people all day long.
But that could have been you as the passenger, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Right? You're there. Unless the way the laws worked, and still, unfortunately, work is a weird word to use.
Right.
But, you know, the way the laws were written, let me put it that way, if you were in the car and you said it wasn't yours and everybody else says it's not theirs, it belongs to all of you. In its full amount. So, and this wasn't the only case like this I ever worked on. But anyway, so this was like, holy shit, that definitely could have been me.
Yeah.
And so he had 4.2 ounces of coke, which is really dumb because 4 ounces was the cliff, right? Where they could charge you with an A1.
Over this limit, and then just all bets are off.
Although, who knows, that maybe it was 3.9 and they rounded it up in the lab.
Push on the scale a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, so I decided to see if I could do something about this. And I called his mother. By the way, the reason that the article was even in the newspaper at all was because his mother, Shirley, who was a homemaker from upstate New York, had been trying to get clemency from Governor Mario Cuomo for her son, the father of our former governor here, and had gotten letters from the sentencing judge, the warden, and even Geraldine Ferraro wrote a letter on his behalf. And Geraldine Ferraro, of course, was a major figure. She was the first woman ever to be nominated to be vice president for a major political party in the United States. And her own son, John, had been arrested for coke but sentenced to house arrest because, you know, I don't know how much he was caught for or what it was. But anyway, so she, to her credit, empathized with this woman who had written her a letter out of the blue and wrote a letter to the governor.
Mm-hmm.
Which you would think would carry some weight. She was from New York. She was a vice presidential candidate.
Yeah, this is an important person with, you know.
And it also is why it made the newspaper, because Cuomo turned it down.
Oh,
so him turning down this powerful woman, you know, was a story. And so that's why it was in the newspaper. That's why I saw it. So I called up Shirley and I said, listen, you probably think I'm some, you know, nut.
You called her up just randomly as a 32-year-old, like,
budding
what was your plan?
Executive. Yeah.
Just, I'm going to try to help? Or
Yeah. I didn't know anything about anything. I just saw that her name was in the article. She was in Rome, New York. How many Shirley Lennons could be in Rome, New York? I called her up. I remember saying something along the lines of, you know, you probably think I'm some whack job from New York City, but I just read this story and I can't, you know, it's living rent free in my head. I got to do something about this. Can I send you some money? I don't have a lot of money because I was just a young record executive back then, but I'll send you what I got. Maybe you can hire a new lawyer. Like, you know, my eyes are wide. I don't know what I'm doing. And she's like, well, it's very nice of you, but, you know, we've exhausted all of our appeals and, you know, we were hoping for clemency. And now that, and you know, she's going on. I'm just like, and she was telling me that there was a guy who was a murderer who got into that same prison as her son, was sent to that prison where her son was after he was convicted. And he was already out. And her son had another 7 years to go before he was even eligible for parole. I'm like, okay, something ain't right. Something's rotten in fucking Denmark and in New York, too. So I said, look, I'm going to try to do something. So I got the only lawyer I knew. The only criminal defense lawyer I knew at the time was a guy named Bob Kalina. He represented two of the artists I had signed, Stone Temple Pilots and Skid Row.
Was he like
Row.
An entertainment attorney?
Yeah. Like I said, he represented Stone Temple Pilots and Skid Row whenever they would get arrested. And they were getting arrested a lot, you know? So I was like, I had him on fucking speed dial, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, I call Bob. I said, you know, can I see you? We sit down. I put him on the phone with Shirley. And he said, look, it's hopeless, but I've been looking for a pro bono case anyway. I'll take the case pro bono. I said, great. And 6 months later, he had found some, you know, angle. Mm-hmm. He said it wouldn't work, but he was able to get us a hearing. So off to Malone, New York we go, which is up on the Canadian border. And we're in this courtroom. I mean, now, bear in mind, this is still 93 or maybe early 94. I still had a freaking mullet and purple Doc Martens. They bring this kid, Steven, in. His hands are shackled to his waist, Jesus. And his legs are chained together. I'm like, did this guy just go kill a bunch of people that we don't know about?
Right. Is this a serial killer? What is happening? Yeah.
And, you know, he was sort of a skinny guy, you know, sort of not, didn't look like an imposing figure.
Right.
Anyway, the arguments go back and forth. I literally have no idea what the fuck I'm listening to. And the judge bangs the gavel down, boom, and says the motion is granted. And I'm sitting there holding Mrs. Lennon's hand. She's squeezing it, as you can imagine.
Wow.
Her husband's on the other side. Stan is his name. And Bob comes sort of scurrying over in his suit and tie. And I go, Bob, what happened? And he goes, we won. And I was like, we what? And he's like, we won. And I was like, holy shit, that's fucking great. Wow. Right? So I was like, this, and that was my moment, right? So they sent him home. And I was like, that was fun, right? And fun is a trivial word, but it was the most fun I could ever remember having had.
It was successful. It was a shot in the dark and also a pretty badass tale of how you got there. Probably safe to say that started informing you from that point forward a little bit in your life.
That's right.
So what did that tell you? Like, what did you learn from that, I guess?
Well, it was beginner's luck for sure. I wish it were that easy.
Right.
But in this case, it was meant to be, obviously. And so it just left me with this feeling of, wow, I have some sort of superpower that I didn't know I have. And I'm going to use it to the best of my ability to help as many people as I can. So that, you know, that feeling, it never gets old. I mean, I often say, Payne, I've had a lot of number one records. I've been super lucky in the music industry, and not one of them comes close to the feeling of walking one person out of prison, which I've had the privilege of doing now many times. So, So that experience changed the course of my life. I realize how lucky I am on so many levels. And how lucky are we, right? Just to be sitting here in New York City, right? Just to be born here.
And when you say that, though, what are you thinking about when you say, I'm so lucky? What do you mean?
I mean, though, you listen to Neil deGrasse Tyson talk about how your odds of even being born are like 1 in 4 trillion or something. I don't even know how the hell you figure that out.
You mean
out.
How microscopic we are in the whole thing?
I can't even win the Powerball. And that's only like 1 in a, you know, 100 million or something. Yeah. Chances are 200 million. But the idea of being born is one thing. But then being born as a human, you know, compared to being born as, you know, you could be a, you know, could be a.
I can name a lot of animals or bugs that would suck to be.
That would suck, right? Yeah. And then there's, you know, and then there's the idea of being born where we were born. I don't know if you were born here in America, right? Yeah. To the people we were born to, right? Because you could be born in America, but be born in...
Yeah, you can't choose that. You can't choose where you were born, who you are.
Dude, that's you're born in North Korea, you're fucked.
You're just...
You might as well be not born.
You're stuck there forever.
Forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and there's so many places where you could be born, you know, into just, you know, I mean, impossible situations, right? And by the way, we have them in America too, right? If you're born in the Mississippi Delta,
yeah,
you know, it's a lot different, you know? I mean, I recognize that there are doors that open for me mm-hmm. that, you know, by virtue of the fact that my father, you know, who was a first generation immigrant, you know, who was, grew up borderline homeless, you know, like a lot of immigrants, you know, built a better future for us.
Yeah.
And that's what everybody wants, right? And so yeah. for us kids, and he was able to, you know, get me that fateful interview. I make no bones about it, right? I mean, he, when I was a misfit 18-year-old, smoking pot all day, didn't want to go to college, he knew somebody who got me an interview at Warner Communications, and they gave me this one-year trainee position and stuck me at Atlantic Records with this, like I said, with the staple gun and some double-sided tape. And I was like, I fell in love with the music business. But yeah. Had that door not been opened, who knows? You know what I mean? Like, it's like...
Did you know at that time, though, how, I guess, special that was? Or did that come in sort of a nuanced way in hindsight as you grew older?
No, it came, I think, you know, as you grow up, you start to really appreciate that type of, you know, privilege, if you want to call it that,
right.
or luck or you know, right. serendipity or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, but it's important that we don't take it for granted and that we try to, you know, reach back and try to create opportunities for other people who weren't as lucky, you know? So, and then of course, part of that being unlucky business is being born in a place where you're, or in a color of your skin, or born in a skin color, I should say, where you're that much more likely to be victimized by our, you know, disastrous obsession with mass incarceration and, you know, and locking up our own citizens at a rate that no other country has ever done in the history of the world. And I hope we'll never, ever do again. So, you know, that's all of that. Look, you have to get lucky in life in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's in an average of like 3 car accidents, I've heard, you know, in their life.
Should I got like 2 more then?
You got 2 more to go?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I think I've used up my quota. But, you know, so, you know, there's just so much luck in everything that we do.
So how's that shift your viewpoint then? I mean, because it's easy to say we're so lucky, right? But then, okay, but how do you translate that into your life? Like, how do you actually look at the bigger picture, and what are you really telling yourself every day as you, you know, it's just a moment to say we're so lucky, but yeah, shit can still suck. So
how do you
use that to propel you, I guess?
Good question. So perspective, right? And, you know, on my podcast, you know, one of the podcasts that, the one that I host, but one of the ones that we distribute on my, through my company Lava for Good, is called Wrongful Conviction. That was the first one I started in 2016. You know, we're, I don't know, 50, 60 million downloads now, whatever it is. And, you know, a few hundred episodes. And each week I interview somebody who is the opposite, who is beyond unlucky, who got arrested, charged, and convicted of a crime they didn't commit. Sometimes I go to death row to interview these people. Mm-hmm. I'm going back to death row in Texas to visit one of them next month. A guy named Rob Will, who's innocent, but he's on death row. And so
that'll keep you in check, right?
Yeah. I mean, talk about putting gratitude in your attitude. So every week is another story that is absolutely mind-blowing, because mm-hmm. you sit there and you go, how can Temujin Kenzu, for instance, right, be in prison in Michigan now almost 37 years, when everyone knows and knew back then that he was almost 500 miles away at the time the murder was committed. And yet there he sits 37 years.
So what is the reason then?
Because they like to close these cases, right?
They don't want to be wrong.
Our system of justice, Amanda Knox is like my little sister. We actually call each other.
Yeah, I've actually hung out with her a couple times. She's great.
Amazing. She's a blast. She speaks so eloquently about this. She talks about how we should have, what we have is an adversarial system of justice, which means the prosecution wants to win, right? Of course, the defense wants to win. That's true in any system. But what we should have is an inquisitorial system of justice, as many other countries do, where what you're trying to do is get to the truth. You're not trying to win. Mm-hmm. But as so many of our top people in the justice system, DAs and judges, are elected, and for them, it's good to have a lot of convictions, right? To at least have the optics.
You get replaced if you're the guy who is losing all your cases as a DA, right?
And think about this. The higher the profile the case, right? Small community, grisly murder, whatever it might be.
It becomes a pissing contest.
Amanda's the perfect example of this, right? And then it becomes trial by media and among other things. And it also becomes a thing where there's pressure from the community, mm-hmm. from your bosses, from your maybe even from your own family to solve this case. And if you do, there's good news. You're going to be in the newspaper, right? You're going to be heralded. You might get promoted. You might have an opportunity to move up to a different position that you'd like to have, run for a higher office, et cetera, et cetera. You have prosecutors that brag about having a perfect record in murder cases, right? Meaning a perfect record of getting everyone convicted. But in this country, right, where you have states like Louisiana and Florida, where for every 7 people in each of those states that's been executed, 3 have been found innocent on death row.
That's a real stat?
Uh-huh. And that doesn't even include ones...
That's too many. That's a
lot. Dude, any is too many. How about that?
Any is too many. Yes, you're right. I mean, if that was you, that would be horrible.
This is what I say to people who are in favor of the death penalty. Yeah. They're not even, to use a baseball analogy, they're not even batting 700. It might not be 600. These are death penalty cases, right? The ones that should be most scrutinized. So
they're not even good at it.
They're not even getting it right. Like I said, nowhere close to 70% of the time. And think about this. If you're on death row and the whole system is stacked against you, once you're convicted, right, you're no longer innocent until proven
guilty.
Undoing
that is a whole different thing.
Now you're guilty until proven innocent. Although I believe that once you're arrested, that whole thing kicks in. But I think those are just words for the most part in our system. But so now you're on death row. How the hell are you going to prove that you're innocent? It's almost impossible. So if all those people, almost all of whom were very poor, were able to find a way to prove they're innocent from inside death row, how many others were there that weren't able to, who are mentally incapacitated, who have given up hope, who are not in a position or just can't find the evidence or the evidence is hidden? I interviewed a guy, just to give you an idea of how fucked up our system is. Mm-hmm. On wrongful conviction, I interviewed a guy named Anthony Aponovich. I spoke about him when I was on Joe Rogan. And Anthony was convicted of a crime he didn't commit in the state of Ohio, sentenced to death. The state said the DNA evidence had been lost. This was a violent crime that had a lot of DNA, right? I think it was a rape murder. And yeah, it was. And 32 years later, the DNA is found. It was stored in the wrong place or whatever it was, right?
It was under here the whole time? Like, come on.
Somebody, somehow or other, the defense got a hold of it. Mm-hmm. They got it tested, and it proved what he had been saying all along, which is that he was innocent. So he was freed, right?
After 32 years.
Gets worse. So he's home for 17, 18 months.
Okay.
He's a grandfather now, right? Sitting on the porch with his grandchildren one day. He said 8 cop cars roll up, or a dozen, whatever it was, tons of cops jump out and rearrest him. He's like, what are you doing?
They just couldn't let it go.
They took him back to death row because somebody in the halls of power, justice, quote unquote, we don't even call it a justice system, we call it a legal system because there's a little justice in it. But somebody had discovered that there's a statute in Ohio, which we're working to overturn now, that says that the only person that can request DNA testing is the incarcerated person themselves. Okay. And because he didn't request it, because he had been told it didn't exist, the fact that it had been found and proved his innocent and proved his innocence was not relevant, and they put him right back on death row, which is where he is right now as we're sitting here having this conversation.
Where is the logic in that?
There's none. They know he didn't do it, but they put him back on death row.
So they really just went and found a loophole because they wanted to be right.
And now we have to work to change the law in Ohio.
That's a systemic cultural problem with the whole thing, right?
And let us not forget that the Supreme Court, thanks to Justice Scalia, I think he was the one who wrote the opinion or whatever, it said that actual innocence is not a reason to be freed from death row.
Well, that's proof right there.
Yeah, no, that doesn't... They prefer finality over justice. So, and let us also reflect for a moment that in almost every case, well, in which, yes, in almost every case, because there are exceptions to this, and I can explain that, but in almost every case in which someone is wrongfully convicted of a crime, a violent crime, the actual perpetrator remains free.
So now, not only is this guy's life ruined, but someone who likely kills people is potentially doing it again.
I mean, there are certainly people who, you know, do these things once and then never again. But
right.
but I think this, you know, it's a hard one to prove. But I think it's extremely likely and logical that if someone does something like this and gets away with it, they have that proclivity. They probably will do it again. I mean, especially if they get away with it when they're young, when you're still, you know, more likely to do these things. We know that people age out of crime, which is why it's so insane that we have this aging prison population in America.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
It's hard not to think about. It goes back to what we were talking about before about being lucky. The juxtaposition, you know, like if it was a split screen and, you know, I'm in my nice two-bedroom apartment with a view and a dog and an espresso machine. And if I want to go for a walk afterwards, that's what I'm going to go do. If I want to go to the gym, whatever, right? Like most people, I enjoy a level of freedom that is incredible. And then, you know, on the other side of the screen, you have this guy who did nothing wrong in his life, who is in a 5 by 9 foot cell, the size of your bathroom at home, most likely, if you're having a normal sized bathroom, like most people. With nothing but like steel and concrete, and it's hot and it smells terrible and it's noisy and it's miserable and the food stinks and you're just trapped there with nothing but hardship, deprivation, and misery. And it's like, why do we do it like this? Why? Like, we don't need a death penalty and we certainly don't need to have 2 million people in prison. Yeah. And it's like, you know, we lock black people up here at 6 times the rate of white people. We also lock more black people up per capita in America to this very day than South Africa during apartheid. And
Jesus,
you know, and inside those numbers, you know, like many people know, we have 4.4% of the world's population, but like 25% of the world's prison population, 33% of the world's female prison population. One out of every three women in a prison cell right now, as we're sitting here, is in this country, the freest country in the world.
Those numbers don't add up.
Yeah, and I hate to just barrage you with statistics, but
no,
the fact
I mean
is,
those things matter to kind of paint a clearer picture for me in this moment right now, just the how wrong they are.
And then, you know, I'll just give you one more, right? I mean, look, the social scientists that studied this, you know, from Ivy League schools or whatever, estimate that between 4 and 7% of people in prison in America are innocent. I believe that's very low because I think they're not taking certain things into account, like the guilty plea problem, and which is the fact that a lot of people plead guilty even when they're innocent because they're looking at too harsh of a
because
sentence.
Because the alternative, right. The risk is
total.
Yeah.
Total. You could be looking at life in prison. And so I think that, you know, it's probably a lot closer to 10% at least. But even if you take a mid-case scenario of the most conservative estimates, which is 4 to 7%, if you take 5.5% and say, well, there's 2 million people plus in prison in America right now. That's a lot of people. That's 100, 110,000 people, right?
Wow.
And that's on the low estimate. And that doesn't even include the fact that we have all these people in jail. Hundreds of thousands of people in jail right now in America who haven't been convicted of anything. They just can't, they're too poor to post bail. So they're just stuck there. And like, and jails are, you know, most people think jail sounds more benign than prison. Most jails are much more dangerous than even the maximum security prisons that you hear about, right? Because it's pure chaos.
Just so, some podunk town somewhere and some sheriff who's running it how they want to. And that sounds horrifying.
Podunk town. How about right across the river from here? Rikers Island, right?
Or right there. Yeah.
Yeah. Where since our new mayor took office, 29 people, inmates have lost their lives there. And we don't really use the word inmate anymore. 29 incarcerated men have lost their lives, mostly through murder. While waiting trial at Rikers Island, just since this new mayor took office. That's 29 people who had lives and families and dreams, and you know, and some of them were guilty. You know, I'm not somebody who thinks everybody's innocent. Some of them were guilty, but guilty of what? Some of them were guilty of shoplifting or jumping a turnstile or, you know, drinking a beer in the park. Right. Night or something, you know, like they got arrested for nuisance crimes, but they were too poor to post bail, which is why I've been deeply connected to the bail reform movement for many years as well.
I mean, it's clear to me that the work that you're doing, which is also very admirable, is helping. But what, in your opinion, is it going to actually literally take in a grand scheme of things to make this problem go away?
Awareness is probably the first thing, right?
But even if we all knew,
well, then we have to, once people know, there starts a ripple effect, right? It's why I started the podcast, the Wrongful Conviction Podcast, okay. is to make potential jurors more thoughtful, right? More aware of the problems that exist in our system and less likely to therefore just vote to convict because it seems like that would be the reason why you would be there, which is what most people think. So, and then if you extend that out, you know, people ask me, well, what can I do? Well, what you can do is you can, of course, you can post about it and talk about it and do what you can on that level. You can also vote. And it sounds like a cliche, but vote in local elections, right? Vote in DA races, vote in prosecutor, judge races, things like that. Look at these candidates. Your vote means so much in those races. I mean, you should vote, you know, in presidential races too, but when there's a small number of people voting, your vote is, you know, super important.
Pull some weight.
Yeah, pull some weight. I mean, some of these races have come down to one vote. I mean, it's not hyperbole.
Yeah, so, literally one. Yeah.
So if we can elect better people, and if we can, you know, throw out of office people who are, you know, these conservative, quote unquote, tough on crime, which is a nonsensical thing. They're not tough on crime, they're tough on people. Mm-hmm. You know, the places that have the highest crime rates are all the ones that have the most conservative prosecutors. And in places where we've had prosecutors come in who have taken alternative approaches, the crime goes down. You know, It's a very simple thing, Payne, and I talk about this all the time. And like I said, I do a lot of public speaking. So if you're interested, you can contact me. I'm always interested in doing that. You can
That'd be awesome.
DM me at it's Jason Flom, or even I'll put my email address in here right now. It's jason.flom@lavarecords.com. We know what causes crime, and we know what prevents crime. That's not what you think.
What causes crime?
Desperation.
Desperation.
Mm-hmm. Desperation causes crime.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's a big word, right? Under that, well, people say, what about mental health? I'd say that's desperation, right? If you have severe enough mental health challenges and no one's helping you with those, then it's not illogical to think that you're going to act out in a way that we as society go, hey, that's a crime.
You mentioned going back to the root of the crime and it being related to desperation and mental illness sometimes and these factors. Were you getting at that maybe we should solve that problem?
Yes. So what causes crime is desperation, and what prevents crime is hope.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not hard when you think of it in those terms to see what I mean, because when you have people who live in desperate poverty without any opportunity, where they're being harassed by police, where there's gunshots in their neighborhood from people who are, you know, on the other side of the law, whatever, where they're witnessing, you know, they're having traumatic experiences witnessing violence day in and day out. And I'm reading that book by Coates is his last name, called Between the World and Me. It's incredible how that it puts a fine point on this, but so many things do. But so eventually, if you don't see a way out of that, it's not illogical that you will resort to it itself.
For sure.
Or you'll do what you need to do to survive or to feel like you're giving yourself, like I said, a way out. And look, many of the most prominent members of our society who came from that type of background were involved in selling drugs or were involved in, you know, some other activities, which, you know, the entrepreneurial spirit is what drives them to success in the corporate world or in the music world or entertainment or whatever. And those, that same gene sort of drives you to do what you have to do to make it when you're in a situation where, you know, there doesn't seem to be, you know, other than maybe sports or music, a way out, you know, where you're dealing with terrible schools and terrible hardships. And, you know, your father's in prison, as too many fathers are in this country, goes back to that problem, right? We know that that cycle, right? The number one thing that determines whether a child will end up in prison is whether they've had a parent in prison. So by locking up generations of black people for crimes that white people get away with all the time is perpetuating that cycle. So if you create hope, on the other hand, by establishing social programs, there are simple things you can do, by the way, that this has been proven. This is not just me. That if you do nothing else but fix the lights in the poorest neighborhood in whatever city you live in, right? Mm-hmm. If you do nothing but pick the garbage up off the streets, but I don't mean you, but the city, right? Or the town or anybody. If you establish a green space or a community center, or even put in a taco stand where people can gather and meet and find commonality, find common ground. Crime goes down dramatically just on the basis of those things. And it goes back to what I'm saying. It reduces desperation, it creates hope, and crime goes down. So we know that that's what works. What do we see in city after city, including New York City right now?
Yeah.
Money being pulled from libraries, being pulled from after school programs, being pulled from sports.
It sounds like you're just saying, give a shit, be a better human.
Yeah, I just got a t-shirt that says, be a good fucking human. Yeah, nice. just like, we know that police don't make us safe, right?
Right.
If they did, we'd be the safest society in the history of the world. We spend more money on police and prisons than any society ever in the history of the world.
We'd be safe.
Right. Yeah. But crime goes up and down globally. It doesn't go up locally, nationally. Mm-hmm. It goes up and down, you know, ebbs and flows for various reasons. And I'm not smart enough to figure it out. In Freakonomics, they had a whole theory about that. But the fact is, that's not what makes us safe. I mean, I say it over and over again. Police don't prevent crime.
Right.
And they rarely solve crimes. So, you know, how do they make us safe? They don't.
They'll close some cases, though.
They'll close some cases, but too often they're wrong, you know, and it's a very small percentage of cases that get closed anyway. So the thing is, you know, we need to do what's been tried and is being tried in cities around this country, which is alternatives to policing, right? Where, you know, we should not be tasking the police with doing things that they have no training in,
well,
right?
Yeah.
and that's most of what they do, right? The number one and two reasons for interactions of police and the public are homelessness and traffic infractions.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
I mean, in all the doom and gloom of the problems, right? On a human level, in the grand scheme of things, do you think that there is hope at all?
Yeah. I think there's hope.
I know that might just be a mentality, like, but do you see a path that we get better? Like this, you know?
Nah, it's funny because, like I said, many years ago, the New Yorker did a story about me, and this journalist named John Seabrook, he said that I have a look on my face of disappointed optimism. I thought
you
that
do?
Was right. Yeah, that's what he said.
Disappointed. That's pretty spot on.
That's good, right?
Yeah.
So, but no, I still do have hope. I mean, I often say I've seen too many miracles to stop believing in miracles.
Yeah, so, yeah, and is that what reminds you? When it happens, right?
Look, it takes... Somebody, when I was a kid, and I was idealistic and was looking to change these things, you know, I was in my young 30s, and this guy puts his arm around me and says, kid, it takes 30 years to change anything. And now here it is 30 years later, and, you know, I've worked on drug decriminalization, among other things, and you can buy weed in Washington Square Park from an authorized seller instead of getting hit in the head with a baton by a cop and then dragged off to jail.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, it's... There is progress. Our prison population is down, you know, slightly. It needs to go down. I think we could reduce our prison population by at least 80% tomorrow and have no negative impact on public safety. In fact, we have a positive impact on public safety, short and long term, but especially long term. So I do have hope. And I think, you know, if we can really look, the young generation of today, you know, my kids are part of it. My daughter has been teaching in prisons for years and years. And she, by the way, I have to plug this, her new podcast.
Oh, nice.
Is called Erased, The Murder of Elma Sands. And it's the story of the first murder trial in American history, at which, by the way, the guy was guilty as fuck. But the defense team, the murder victim, so it deals with misogyny and class, okay. And everything, yeah. Like that, right? Because the victim was not a prominent person, but the murderer, who was her lover, was part of a very wealthy family. And so his family hired for the defense Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr. And so what you'll hear in this podcast, it's called Erased, The Murder of Elma Sands. And what you'll hear is the actual trial, because my daughter Allison found the transcripts.
Oh, amazing.
Trial. And you'll find out some things that you may not want to know about Hamilton. And Burr, we all know, was like a, you know, he was not a good guy.
Turns out they were all pieces of shit.
It turns out they were willing to do a lot of bad things in order to exonerate their guilty client. And this was the trial. As she says, it's the most famous murder trial you never heard of.
Yeah.
Because it was the first one. And a lot of the things that we talk about today, there's still problems in our system, came from that trial. And yours truly is Judge John Lansing, so I get to say overruled and shit a lot, which is really fun.
Is that your one line?
Yeah.
We need one more take.
I'm not an actor.
Do your best overruled. Go.
I did, yeah. No, I had to do it multiple times.
How do you
times.
Do it?
Under the direction of my daughter. It was pretty intimidating.
Let's hear it. How's it sound?
I need a gavel, man.
No, you know. It's acting.
Overruled. No, overruled. Yeah, you got to be like stern. Different.
That's pretty good.
I had to say it a bunch of times.
If you want to help and you give a shit, what would you suggest a listener to do that would make a difference at all?
First of all, thank you for listening. You know, and if you've listened this far, then you probably have hopefully learned some stuff you didn't already know.
Or you're stuck on the tarmac somewhere.
And get you activated or in a traffic jam.
Yeah.
Sorry about the traffic
jam. Subway.
I'm glad
sorry
you're listening.
About that.
You know what I mean? We actually, us podcasters, we like traffic. one of the first things you can do is when you get that annoying jury duty notice in the mail.
Throw it away? No, I'm just kidding.
Don't listen to Payne. Serve on juries, yeah. If you're listening to us now, then you're much more educated than 90% of the other people that are out there.
I see.
And we need you to be on a jury and be, you know, awake and aware, because the life you could save, you know, there's that great saying that it's better that 10 guilty men go free than that one innocent should suffer.
Right.
And I think everyone would agree if that one innocent was somebody they loved.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
And everybody who's in that defendant's chair has somebody that they love. Yep. And think about it too. Like, even somebody could be technically guilty of a crime, but you might think that crime shouldn't really be a crime, right? Drug possession or some other ridiculous thing. And you don't have to convict them. You can, you know, it's called civil disobedience. You can exercise your right and just say, you know what? Not guilty.
You can just disagree.
You just say not guilty, and that's it. It only takes one
person.
That's
an interesting point, because I don't know if that's, you know, complete common knowledge.
I don't think so.
Good to know. Okay.
Yeah, so serve on the juries. Encourage other people to do so. Spread the word, you know, with among your friend group, whatever form that takes. I think there are organizations you can look up. One of the ones I think is one of the most important ones is an organization called Civil Rights Corps. I'll tell you this, another thing you can do today, right now, that's free, is there's a newsletter called Alex, A-L-E-C-S, apostrophe S, Alex Copaganda Newsletter. Copaganda is what the media engages in as they...
Copaganda.
You get it. You got it. So subscribe to that blog. It's fantastic. And there's so much to be learned from that. And then, you know, check out more podcasts. Like if we've gotten your attention, check it out. You know, learn more. You know, you might find a case even on my original show, Wrongful Conviction, that touches you in such a way that you want to get involved. You can write to people. You can go to the Douglas Project, right? There's a thing called Douglas Project, named after Frederick Douglass, that is an organization relatively new that was founded with the idea that we could help to bring people inside of prisons and break that, you know, break down that invisible wall between people on the outside and people on the inside. That you can write letters. You can volunteer. You can establish. You can create hope for somebody who's in a hopeless place.
Well, I think that all the work you've done and continue to do is inspiring, and it's pretty badass. And I think that, you know, I definitely got something from it. And it kind of leaves me with the lingering thought that we can all do something. And big or small, it still matters.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate your time today, and it's been fun, and I've learned more stats than I'll probably remember. I'll have to go write them down.
You may have to listen to your own podcast.
I might.
You know what I mean? That would help.
I'll have to listen to yours first. It might take me a while.
Yeah, we can put crib notes in, the clip notes in there, crib notes, whatever the hell you call that. Yeah,
but I do want to check out your, is it your daughter's podcast?
Daughter's podcast is Erased.
Okay, I'm going to do that one first because I'm curious. Yeah,
yeah, dude, it's good. It's really good. Yeah,
I'll let you know exciting. When I hear overruled.
It's getting a lot of attention, and it's going to be a really
good for her. That's awesome. That's exciting.
Really, really exciting. So, yeah. Listen, I just want to thank everybody for taking the time to listen. I know you got other things to do, and you know, look, I'm a fan of this guy here, Payne. So I like being on his show, and I think maybe we'll figure out some other hills we can climb together.
Yeah,
you know, let's fuck around and find out.
Well, yeah, let's fuck around and find out.
Done.
Cheers.
Talking to Death is a production of Tenderfoot TV and iHeart Podcast, created and hosted by Payne Lindsay. For Tenderfoot TV, executive producers are Payne Lindsay and Donald Albright. Co-executive producer is Mike Rooney. For iHeart Podcasts, executive producers are Matt Frederick and Alex Williams, with original music by Makeup and Vanity Set. Additional production by Mike Rooney, Dylan Harrington, Sean Nerney, Dayton Cole, and Gustav Wild for Cohedo. Production support by Tracy Kaplan, Mara Davis, and Trevor Young. Mixing and mastering by Cooper Skinner and Dayton Cole. Our cover art was created by Rob Sheridan. Check out our website, talkingtodeathpodcast.com.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Talking to Death. This series is released weekly, absolutely free. But if you want ad-free listening and exclusive bonuses, you can subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to tenderfootplus.com.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.